One word, four letters. What do you think? Cash. You guys, cash. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday, today the 18th of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So there is something happening right now in the markets that we need to spend a little time on right here at the top of the program. And no, it's not just stocks, because that whole not the economy thing, right? But I am not talking just stocks here. If you looked around at the close today, you would have seen stocks off a ton. Commodities down as well, oil in particular, and more on that in a minute, by the way. Gold was down and bond prices were down as well. Everything was being sold. And when everything's being sold and nothing is being hedged, people are looking for cash. And when people are looking for cash, well, that's an indicator of how serious this is, right? Okay, oil. As promised, as we've been telling you off and on the past couple of weeks, oil has been getting clobbered, caught between a coronavirus-induced drop in demand and a price war between Russia and Saudi Arabia. And in this oil squeeze, one place likely to be hardest hit is Midland, Texas, population 46,618. A new report out from Brookings reminds us that Midland, out in West Texas, is smack in the heart of the Permian Basin, this country's most critical oil patch. Benchmark West Texas Intermediate crude is down around $20 a barrel right now. That's a level we haven't seen on a prolonged basis since the 1970s. So Marketplace's Scott Tong reports now on life in West Texas as the economic storm comes.
Life in the oil patch moves fast. Drill it, sell it while prices are high, and the bust comes just as fast. West Texas native Christian Wallace hosts the podcast Boomtown and says layoffs have already come.
It's the type of thing where you're fine one day and you wake up in the middle of the night and you don't have a job the next day.
The Permian Basin has survived past shakeouts, but Wallace thinks this could resemble the crash of the 80s, when 6,000 oil companies went away amid a prolonged glut of oil.
We heard our grandparents talk about the busts, but this is new to my generation. And so, yeah, it's going to be a wild ride.
Bankruptcies are seen as inevitable. And for the rig workers, engineers, and truck drivers looking for work, who's hiring now? Texas oil and gas attorney John McFarland.
Now we're also in the world of viruses, and those people are going to have a hard time finding anything else to do.
In the past, the people of the Permian Basin have shocked doubters by innovating, finding cheaper ways to drill oil. But Taylor Crisp at Agile Oilfield Services in Odessa says in a bust, some get creative through crime.
They'll just drive through town, grab anything that's not locked down or chained down, generators, you know, smaller portable things, and then they'll run it off to another city and pawn it.
In downtown Midland, a bank sign tracks the price of crude and how many oil rigs are humming. Those numbers could stay down a while. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The Senate passed the House coronavirus relief bill today. That's the $8.5 billion package. The big one, a trillion or more, is still in the negotiating stage. But the message is that stimulus is coming. It's just a question of when. And for some, it's a question of how the government's going to pay for it. They're going to borrow it, is the answer. Unless maybe they don't have to. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports now on a small but growing call for the government to just, you know, print the money out of thin air.
Sam Gold is a photographer in New York, where the city is all but on lockdown. Things are not going well.
All of the shoots, basically from today on, have completely canceled or postponed. So I went from having a fully booked calendar for March and April to now nothing.
Multiply this across millions of jobs throughout the economy, and this is what a recession looks like. Gold still has to pay rent, still has to eat. The Treasury Department wants to send $1,000 checks to people like Gold. Congress is working out aid packages for industries and small businesses. This could all easily cost $1 trillion. Larry Seidman, professor at the University of Delaware, says the Treasury should send out even more, checks of $3,000. And he says the Fed should just print the money.
The Federal Reserve should be permitted to write a huge check to the Treasury, and the check would be not a loan. It would be a grant, so the Treasury does not have to borrow and there would be no increase in our federal government debt.
But nothing is ever totally free, even free money. Kent Smetters is professor at the Wharton School.
If you kept doing that willy-nilly, you're going to cause inflation.
Econ 101, too much money in the system, prices go up. When central banks do this, it's called monetizing the debt, by the way.
In fact, when we see really high inflationary countries like Zimbabwe, it all comes from them monetizing the debt.
But Smetters says you're not really likely to get that kind of inflation in a recession short term. And he says it may well be worth some inflation in the long term to get people the help they need now. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Regular listeners to this program might recognize what Sabri was just talking about as modern monetary theory, or real close to it. You can find the explainer on MMT that we did at marketplace.org. The other thing you can do, actually, is sign up for our daily newsletter. You can get yourself the latest on this crazy fast-moving story. Marketplace.org/newsletters is where you go for that. There is a lot of news now. We get that. A lot of uncertainty. A lot of questions about what is going on in this economy. So send them to us, your questions. I'm at Kai Rizdahl on Twitter. There's a link on our website you can use as well. Here's today's first question.
Hi, this is Lola Franco from Briarcliff, New York. I didn't pay attention in economics. For simpletons, what's the difference between a recession and a depression?
Okay, first of all, I went to high school with Lola in Briarcliff, New York. I actually never took econ, so if she did, she's ahead of me. Anyway, disclosure on that. But to the point, look, there have been PhD dissertations written on this topic, and we've only got a half an hour on this radio program, but here are the highlights. According to the people who get to decide, which, by the way, is a group called the Business Cycle Dating Committee of the National Bureau of Economic Research, the textbook definition of a recession is, and this is a quote from them, a significant decline in economic activity spread across the economy lasting more than a few months. And then it lists a bunch of indicators. A depression, generally speaking, is more severe, it's longer lasting, and it's sometimes, quite often, global. But here's a useful indicator if you want some numbers on this. The peak unemployment rate during the Great Recession 10 years ago was 10%. Peak unemployment during the Great Depression back in the 30s, 24.9%. So, Lola, that's the quick and dirty. As I said, on Wall Street today, everybody was selling everything. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We are going to get a report tomorrow morning that's going to give us our first real economic data peek into this thing, something called initial claims for unemployment benefits. It'll be for last week, so there might be a little bit of a lag between what it says and this week's reality, which is going to be worse. But there have already been people getting laid off from jobs in entertainment and restaurants and bars and other sectors as well. So we asked Marketplace's Mariel Segarra what the economy is going to look like as unemployment starts to rise.
Up until 3 days ago, Dennis Mendoza worked in sales at a small family-owned store in Florida called Tampa Bay Ponds and Rocks. Business was good. Then people stopped coming because of the virus.
Business had gotten so slow, and I was the last one hired, so the first one let go.
He just filed for unemployment, but doesn't currently get any government assistance. And he and his fiance don't have a financial cushion.
I mean, I have like $100 in my bank account, and that's about it. I've been trying to apply for new jobs, but nobody's hiring right now with everything going on.
We don't know exactly how high unemployment might go in this situation. But one recent point of comparison, during the Great Recession, it hit 10%. Erica Groshen, a labor economist at Cornell, tells us what that looked like.
So at 10% unemployment, everybody knows somebody who has lost a job or who has finished school recently and is not able to find a job.
And at that level of unemployment, it takes longer for the economy to bounce back. Seth Carpenter is chief U.S. economist at UBS.
Because there are going to be people out of work, they're going to have depressed incomes, and they're going to be much more frugal with whatever spending they're able to do.
And you need those people to go out and spend money before businesses can hire their workers back. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
There are some people who have certain jobs is probably a better way to put that, who just aren't going to be laid off. People whose jobs are what keep the rest of us alive. Marketplace's Jasmine Gars caught up with some of them. These are people who just can't work remotely.
Douglas Washington drives a sanitation truck throughout New York City. Washington pulled over to speak to me on his Queens route. He says sanitation workers often feel like supermen with amazing immune systems from handling city waste. But he's worried about his family getting ill.
I'm nervous because I've never seen anything like this before. Out of all my 25 years in this industry and all the outbreaks of diseases or viruses that has occurred.
John D'Alessandro is a volunteer firefighter in upstate New York. He says one precaution his team is taking.
We wear certain personal protective equipment, gloves, face shield, respirator, and we're limiting the time that people are spending at the station.
Also, to help first responders, Ron Cooley says other people in the community should stick to social distancing. He's a trained EMT in Fairfax, Virginia.
Stay in place. If there's no reason to go out, don't go out. And let's not overwhelm our 911 response and the emergency rooms.
He says his department hasn't seen an increase in calls so far, but they are bracing for that and making plans on how to stay in operation if at least 25% of his coworkers start to get sick. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Okay, another question now. Y'all keep asking. We will keep answering. Here you go.
Hey, Kai. This is Emma in Seattle. Any thoughts on the devolving U.S.-China relationship? How will the economy deal if this continues to break down, on top of everything else?
Emma. Hey, so yeah, lots of thoughts. The two big ones go like this. First of all, it's really important to remember that that whole trade war thing, it's still happening. We are still putting tariffs on $360 billion worth of Chinese imports to this country, medical supplies among them, I ought to point out. So that's one thing. The other thing is that the repositioning of supply chains that the trade war started is only going to intensify now. The catch is that we are not going to be able to see any of that. We're not going to have any visibility into it until we're through this crisis. Coming up.
So we're offering curbside pickup. We're offering FaceTime where people can shop with us over the phone.
One toy store in St. Louis trying to stay open and trying to stay safe. But first, let's do the numbers. Okay, here you go. The Dow Industrial is down 1,338.6.3%, 19,898. It was way worse at certain points today. The NASDAQ down 344 points, 4.7%, 69.89. The S&P 500 gave back 131 points, 5.1%, 23.98. We did hit the breakers at one point today. The country's biggest manufacturer, that would be Boeing, is asking the U.S. government for a $60 billion bailout package for the beleaguered aerospace industry. Boeing shares shed almost 18% today. Disney also facing its own set of issues. Disney shares dropped 5%. Late this afternoon, the New York Stock Exchange announced it's going to suspend floor trading effective next Monday. To be clear, there is still going to be electronic trading, just nobody on the floor. Now, why they're waiting till next Monday? You tell me. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. One of the things we've been talking about the past couple of days along the general theme of it's just different now is the disruption that's come to K-12 education and colleges and universities as well. That's a big deal for a whole lot of us, but we can't talk to y'all. We can, though, talk to the 10 people we introduced you to last month for our series, The United States of Work. 10 people we found who are a roughly representative sample of the American labor force. Derek Lindstrom is the dean of the School of Liberal Arts and Cultures at Minneapolis Community and Technical College. His wife, just for some context here, is a school librarian. Derek, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for checking in.
So I guess the first question has to be, what does a college administrator do when he doesn't have a college that's up and running that he's got to administrate?
Well, we've been... The last week's been a whirlwind, and we started the beginning of spring break last week when faculty were on spring break, planning for what it would look like if we couldn't deliver courses on ground. By midweek, we'd move to the, we're not going to be able to do that. Yeah. Yesterday, I spent the whole day in virtual and face-to-face meetings with my faculty talking about the tremendous lift that they're going to be doing, converting what used to be face-to-face courses mm-hmm. to alternative delivery method. And then, of course, you know, the next questions are, once that gets going and gets moving, is what happens to the summer sessions, and what possible impact could this have on fall courses as well as enrollment? So there's plenty of work to do in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. You, as obviously you're an educator, you're stuck now with two kids at home, right? Doing their own homeschooling thing too.
Yeah. So, not only do I have two kids at home, in their district, they're a 1-to-1 district. So all students have devices, and they've worked really diligently in the past to ensure students without access to affordable internet in their homes, can be provided low cost internet, or, in my case, it's facilitated from the librarian. So my wife, Christina, made sure on Friday when her students left that all the students that didn't have access to internet at home had remote PUCs that would provide a Wi-Fi hotspot. And so only will I have two kids working from home, she'll be working from home. And my mother-in-law, who lives in the house, works from home. So the bigger question is, in the next few days, when I move to working from home, you know, will the internet infrastructure in our neighborhood be able to withstand that type of demand?
Right. No, for sure. And that's a question for everybody. You mentioned mother-in-law. She is, in theory, not a young woman, right? So there's that whole susceptibility thing you have to deal with as well.
Yeah. So both my mother-in-law and my father-in-law are in the categories that we're worried about. So we've been really diligent about making sure that we're following protocol about social distancing. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it sure will. These are stressful times. How is your stress level?
You know, I feel really fortunate. I had basically 8 hours of virtual meetings with my faculty that I'd been worried about. How do I support them? How can I lessen the stress that they have, because subsequently our students are feeling even more stressed. And then I'm a runner. And so regardless of whether, you know, the United States is on quarantine or not, no one's up at 4:45 in the morning anyways. And so I'm still able to manage to get my exercise in.
Which is oh so important. Derek Lindstrom, he's the dean of the School of Liberal Arts and Cultures at Minneapolis College, one of the 10 in our series, United States of Work. Derek, thanks a lot. I appreciate you taking a minute in what I'm sure is a crazy, crazy day.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Kai.
So Derek's a pretty good case study of the pressures of our collective new reality. right? From tech to banking to marketing to education. If you've got a white-collar job, you are more likely than not to be working from home right now. And there are lots of goods about it. No commute, you can get laundry done and usually be more productive, all while doing your bit to fight a global pandemic. But the circumstances right now are a bit unique, yeah? From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more now on the stresses of staying in.
Workplace distractions have reached a new level at Eric Chesilski's house.
A lot of my time is spent on the phone, and there's kids in the background screaming, yelling, and trying to get your attention.
He works in sales for a tech company in Cleveland and is now working from a card table set up in his basement with a one-year-old and four-year-old at home.
Guess what, Dad?
What?
Can we do something prettier?
Yeah, when Daddy's done working.
But at least his kids are young enough that he doesn't have to worry about their schoolwork, like Los Angeles mom Sonia Kang and millions of other parents around the country where schools have shut down.
You know that show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? It just made me realize how hard, you know, teaching is.
Kang is juggling fifth grade math tests for her son and high school reading assignments for her daughter as she tries to run her own online clothing business. She's pretty much shifted her own work to the evenings. But she says she actually feels more clear-headed and productive just knowing her kids are home.
I was a bit anxious knowing that my children were out there and how many touch points they possibly are going through on a typical day.
Less sanguine is Allison Landa, a freelance writer in Berkeley, California, who was not thrilled when her husband and four-year-old son invaded her workplace.
My family is about to kill each other.
She and her husband have both set up in the living room of their two-bedroom apartment.
I think we're doing it wrong, right? To put it mildly, if, you know, he's on the couch, I'm on the easy chair. My son is kind of everywhere he wants to be.
Teresa Douglas, a longtime remote worker and author of the guidebook Working Remotely, says clearly communicating boundaries is so important.
It is surprisingly difficult to avoid interrupting people that you can see.
For those who can't put a physical barrier between themselves and their housemates, she suggests a visual cue, like putting on a certain jacket or a hand signal that means do not interrupt. And for those with young kids at home,
picking somebody who's going to be the designated interruptee. So from 2 to 4, the kid comes in, he's yours. From 9 to 12, I'm the one that is going to answer all of those questions and get the snacks.
Even adult relationships experience new pressures when our working patterns change, says Boston psychologist Kate King.
There are ways that work meets our needs that we're not often even aware of until we're away from work.
Missing out on the casual socializing, the sense of validation from coworkers, or the healthy time away from a partner can put extra stress on a relationship.
There's a bunch of stuff you never talked about and you never had to talk about. And now you would be well served by having those conversations.
Like, who's going to be responsible for all the dishes that are piling up now that people are eating every meal at home? Or how much alone time you need to focus on work? I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
It's a huge luxury to be able to work from home, all the inconveniences aside. But spare a thought here for a second for those who can't. Medical professionals and those who support them, as Jasmine was talking about, of course. Grocery store workers, for sure. Also, some retailers. Retailers specifically that serve kids, like toy stores, which even in the best of times seem like petri dishes, right? But which also right now sell stuff that people want now that so many kids are out of school. Shantae Ray owns two toy stores in and around St. Louis. She sent us this dispatch from the front lines of kid retail.
In one hand, our stores are going through this, first of all, we can't afford to just not have business for this amount of time. So we're offering curbside pickup. We're offering FaceTime where people can shop with us over the phone. These are things we've always offered, but now people are in a situation where they really need them. I'm the type of person that always wants to look on the bright side of things. And so the sort of hidden bright thing that I feel like is it may end up being a little bit positive is that we're going to be forced to spend time with each other in our family, in our little family units. You know, soccer practice is canceled. Wow, we can actually sit down and eat dinner together. Wow, what are we going to do for the rest of the night? There's no sports on TV. You know, our toy stores offer that. We offer this great distraction and all of these alternatives to things that have to do with screens that can really help you, you know, have a great experience at home. And so that's the bright side to me, is that maybe families will be a little more open to, you know, embracing some of those times of activities that we really don't normally have enough time to even get to.
Shantae Ray, she owns Happy Up Incorporated stores in and around St. Louis. This final note on the way out today, in which I am pleased to be able to report that on our morning meeting Zoom tomorrow, I am going to look fabulous. Seems the video conferencing service has a feature that will freshen you up a little bit. Seriously, go to the video settings box, select touch up my appearance, and Zoom will, quote, retouch your video display with a soft focus. This can help smooth out the skin tone on your face to present a more polished looking appearance when you display your video to others. So that's that. Also, and not for nothing, Zoom right now has a bigger market cap than Uber does. Okay, another one in the books. Dow Industrials down 1,338 points, 6.3%. The NASDAQ off 344 points, that is 4.7%. The S&P 500 gave back 131 points, that is 5.1% on that index. Our media production team includes Sarah Bruguer, Robin Edgar, Drew Jostad, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Jay Siebold, Charlton Thorpe, and Ben Tolliday. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.